Hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 81. This podcast is brought to you by nobody in particular. That's because we have no sponsors yet, and we'd really like some. So if you could help us out, what we need you to do is go to iTunes. While you're there, you want to hit that subscribe button and leave us a review and definitely a rating. So, you know, 4 or 5 stars would be great. You can also find us on Stitcher Radio and Google Plays now, whatever the heck they call that over there. So, yeah, on Google for those of you who don't have an iPhone or an iPod. If you want to follow us on Twitter, @3DrinksInPod. Instagram is @3DrinksInPodcast, all one big long word. And 3DrinksInPodcast@gmail if you want to contact us that way. Also on Facebook. But, I mean, is there anybody even on Facebook anymore? Maybe. I don't know. We are, that's for sure. So go look at that page, too. In this episode, we tackle some of the more recently released trailers for the upcoming blockbuster seasons that are upon us in terms of movies. Yeah, that's pretty much everything I have to say. Okay, sit back, relax, enjoy.
Question for the barbecue chef. Don't you think there is an inherent danger in sending underqualified civilians into space?
I'll field this one. The only danger is if they send us to that terrible planet of the apes. Wait a minute. Statue of Liberty. That was our planet! You maniacs! You blew it up! Damn you! Damn you all to hell!
Although I watched, I only watched them like once or twice.
That's okay. Just once would be fine.
I mean, some people like study them and dissect them, and
I feel like we have some time on our hands. We don't have that much time on our hands.
Yeah. Plus, I like to go a little surprised, just a little bit.
Like I watched, I want to say 65% of the Spider-Man trailer, and then I'm like, you know what? This is fine. You know, they give you like the one big, like, you know, climactic scene, and like, oh, come on, man. Like, that's like, but it actually helped when, you know, since you have to sell people on yet another Spider-Man film.
Yeah.
You know.
And if you're not happy enough, we got Tony Stark this time. Everybody likes him, right?
Everyone never loves him, right? I mean, 6 films in 10 years.
Yeah. His great-grandchildren never have to work.
Honest to God. So, we'll start with that one then?
Sure.
So, took some notes.
Oh, look at you.
Well.
You're so studious.
Well, you know, they're kind of short, so I wanted to make sure that anything I just wanted to get everything. So Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah, I don't get that subtitle.
I don't get the subtitle either. I mean, I'm willing to sort of look past it because they appear to be making a passable Spider-Man film for the first time. For the first time.
For the first time, period.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about these movies so much. They're really just like, they're all kind of garbage. But
they weren't all garbage. But they're not as good as everyone thinks they are.
That, I think...
The last one was garbage. It was horrible.
I never saw that one. I was really disappointed in that kid, too. It was Andrew Garfield, who's not a kid. And like, how old is the guy playing him now?
He's young. He's, I don't know, he's 19 or something.
All right. Did it escape everyone's attention? That's probably a good idea to cast a younger actor, not someone going through menopause to play this part.
Well, they say younger actors aren't as talented.
That may be, but I mean, you can get away with like 19 playing 17, or even 20 playing 17. Tobey Maguire was 32 or whatever when they were playing that part. He looked ridiculous.
Yeah, he didn't look like a. Just because, you know, he was short and goofy.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't mean he's a teenager.
I also think he's a staggeringly overrated actor. I mean, I can't recall a single thing I've seen him in where I went, you know, he was quite good in that. If anything, he's ruined things.
Well, you don't see him in very much very often anymore.
Thank God. All right, so is there a chance, this is the note I have, that this film may disappoint?
No. I think it'll just be another run-of-the-mill Marvel movie now. You know?
At worst, you mean?
Right.
Right.
Like Thor or Doctor Strange, even. You know, like, that was enjoyable. That was a good 2 hours. I had some whiz-bang stuff, and then I went home happy.
You know? Yeah, I think that's sort of what we're expected to get for the most part. Occasionally, they might want you to feel something a bit more dramatic, but I think with this, just the sheer volume of, you know, stuff coming out of that studio, that, you know, I mean, occasionally you'll get something like, you know, like a Logan, which people were really kind of not surprised with necessarily, but, you know, impressed with how different it was. And and Deadpool, you know, which was their first foray into like the really raunchy rated R stuff. But for the most part, it's just about, this is a good movie, this is a good movie, and then we'll give you something kind of new, and you'll talk about it like it's a really big deal, and then we'll go on to something more generic. And I think people will be kind of just jazzed that it's a decently put together Spider-Man film, but the bar is so low that they'd have to trip over it, for Christ's sakes, to screw this up.
Yeah, well, they're actually doing something different. I actually went back and I was listening to our podcast where we talked about Spider-Man, and you were asking me, you know, are there other things you can do with Spider-Man besides have him mope? And I was like, yeah, there's 60, 70 years of comic book history. They could do a lot of stuff with Spider-Man. And in this one, they're doing something different. It's not that he's, I don't want to be Spider-Man, and it's not an origin story. It appears to be, I want to do more. How can I do more as Spider-Man, which they haven't done? And he's being held back by, you know, one of all people, Tony Stark, and things like that. And that's nice to see. It's nice to see the heroes who want to do the right thing. And Spider-Man is that kind of hero.
Right.
You know, at least he's kind of like Batman in that way. Mm. You know, I have a responsibility to do more because I can. So that's a nice message.
And the scene that I was talking about before that they kind of spoiled a bit was when he was telling him that he... Stark was saying that you're taking this too seriously. You've gone too far. I love the line. Couldn't you just be like a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man?
Yeah.
That was really clever. Like,
that
served at least two purposes. It got that goofy ass line in there, and it also made a point. Like, do you have to be like, you know, saving the world? Just, you know, help people out like in Queens,
Good. Which is what Spider-Man should do, because he has superpowers, sure, but he's not Superman.
Yeah.
You know, he works best on that ground level. And the villain in this seems to be that kind of a guy, you know. What's his name?
Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
Yeah, he has some advanced weaponry. Okay, sure. But he's still just like a thug and a bank robber kind of guy.
Yeah, a local guy.
Yeah, he's not fighting a sentient robot and his robot army.
Yeah, but Stark says to, or he says to him, like, don't take away the suit from me, you know, I can't, like, I need it, or I can't live without it. And he's like, well, then you shouldn't have it at all. Mm-hmm. And that mirrors very, you know, neatly the Tony Stark Iron Man kind of, like, if that's the most important part of you, then you should get rid of it and find out who you really are. I'm like, oh, okay, that's a nice little
foil. And that's where it's helpful to have a shared movie universe.
Yeah.
Because that character has done that himself. You don't need to know it, but it definitely helps. It gives more weight to it, you know.
Yeah,
it's Iron Man 3. I don't have a suit. Can I still do this without it? Yeah.
Right.
So, they do give a lot away in these trailers, though. Oh, my
goodness. I mean, you're kind of supposed to forget about it, I think, is the point there. I mean, everyone's attention span is 30 seconds. I mean, ours is not, but... Everybody else is.
Yeah.
I like the fat Asian kid.
The fat Asian kid. Yeah.
Like, he has to put on the suit, and you see him sitting there. He's kind of tubby.
You know, every character like that needs to have, that's why it doesn't work as well with Superman. They need to have someone who's like their buddy. They need an Alfred.
Yeah.
You know, whoever it is, whether it's Tony Stark and his robot companion Jarvis, or it's Batman and Alfred, or it's Peter Parker and his nerdy best friend, they have to have that. You need someone that can springboard ideas off of and like, I can climb on the ceiling. Isn't that weird? Yes. Yes, that's weird.
Yeah,
and that, now you can have the friend who can be like, dude, that's crazy, you know?
Yeah, that that guy is us.
Yeah.
That's our entry point into the story, because that's all the things we'd be saying. I mean, I actually went back and I watched Iron Man 1 a few days ago, and there's this great scene with Terrence Howard and him when he's showing him that he's putting on the suit at the end to go save Pepper. And Howard looks at him and goes, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And I mean, that's a Terrence Howard-proof line. He couldn't even fuck that one up. Because for a moment, he was the entry point for us into that, you know, that character. Just to say, like, this is insane, but it's really cool. And yeah, it's kind of grounding. So.
Yeah, no, they need that stuff, you know, and when you don't have that character, it's harder for them too to be like, you know, like Tobey Maguire never had that. So what did he do? He sat moping at the camera all the time. He couldn't talk this stuff out with anybody.
Yeah.
Or he had that cringe-inducing scene where he's talking to the doctor, and he's like, "I have this friend who's got a dream where he's not Spider-Man anymore." I'm like, "Ugh, man, this is so horrible."
Wasn't that Dr. Bruce? What's his face?
I don't know. He was like a hippie guy.
Oh, no. So then, because Bruce Campbell ended up in all those films in some capacity, and I couldn't remember.
Oh, yeah, no, it wasn't him. Thank God. Oh, okay. It was an actual actor.
Yeah, weird, right?
Yeah.
It's an actual actor. So we are going to see Spider-Man then? That's an affirmative?
Yeah, I've always liked Spider-Man. I'll go see it, you know. And it's Marvel, so I have a bit more faith in them than I did, especially after the last one was so terrible.
Yeah,
I know you didn't see it. It was really, really bad.
Nowhere to go but up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not even like, oh, this isn't so good. I hope the next one's better. It was like, this is the worst fucking Spider-Man thing I've ever seen.
It's worse than Spider-Man 3?
It's up there, yeah. I mean, Spider-Man 3 was no good either, but...
Yeah. Anyway. All right. King Arthur, Legend of the Sword or something. I don't know.
Yeah. What is this? What is this movie?
They keep
what
making...
What is going on?
So my first note says, why do they keep making movies about this and Robin Hood? And I guess it's because they're kind of timeless, and so you sort of want to take advantage of the fact that you've got a built-in audience and... You know, people will come see it because they have some connection. I mean, Hollywood does not like to make movies that are totally original. They just don't. They will, because those things tend to win Oscars a lot of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And but as far as like, you know, I can't think of what the term is, familiar property or something like, but like as far as like the stuff people
public
already
domain.
Know about.
You know, yeah. In the public domain, so.
Well, no, I mean, like property in terms of, like things people know already.
Yeah.
And it could be history, it could be, you know, a remake, a reboot, whatever it is. But, you know, this is the, like, next to Beowulf, this is the, you know, one of the original stories. And did they make a Beowulf and it wasn't very good?
Yeah, that wasn't so good either.
Yeah. Anyway, so... Yeah, but they keep trying to reboot Robin Hood and this, and it's generally pretty unsuccessful. I think because previous versions of this either had Richard Gere in them, or they were like super realistic. I think like the last Robin Hood, or the last King Arthur rather, was like had something to do with like ancient Rome, and he was an old Roman soldier that became a king in England, and I don't even know what the fuck was going on, but it was like really dark and gritty, like that kind of thing. And I can't tell much from the trailer, but it seems as if Guy Ritchie is out there Guy Ritchie-ing, and you get this sort of like unusual visual effects kind of thing that he does, and it sort of makes it a look a bit more mystical and magical, and that's okay. Like, they've shied away from that when talking about King Arthur before, but it's, you know, it's not a typical, you know, medieval tale. It can't really be told realistically. There's some fantastical things happening in the story, and so if anybody was going to direct this movie, it kind of makes sense that he would do it. Like, I haven't seen too many of his films, but the ones I've seen, you know, they all take a very unique visual approach to things. Consistently unique, but, you know, it's not, like, it varies a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But,
it just seems actually, like, gone back and read any of these books that these things are based on?
I mean, like, is there an original book for King Arthur?
Yeah, there's, like, the really famous one is, like, The Death of Arthur. It's, like, it's French.
Yeah, they're not British, they are French.
Yeah, everybody always thinks it's... and it's full of, like wizards and wizardry and back and forth, and he's your illegitimate son. I mean, it's nonsense stuff. Like, it's not even very good.
Yeah.
You know? So, I think they were trying... Every time they try to do this, first of all, it's hard to do that stuff and make it sound good. Hmm. It's hard to separate the special effects from, like, you know, when you watch, like, the old 1940s version of King Arthur, and and the castle is clearly made out of, like... plywood. You know, you can see, like, the guy's hand steadying it so that it won't fall over.
I think of the scene in The Rocketeer.
Yeah. Pretty much. You know.
Yeah.
And so it was just like, let's just do a realistic one, and then it got more and more realistic, and then they did, you know, the one with Richard Gere and
Julia Ormond.
Yeah.
I mean, that one actually, that's probably one of the best ones of the bunch, because it doesn't, it's not really about that. It's not like a King Arthur's story. It's a love triangle.
Right.
It could be anybody. And that's something I remember I was hearing guys talk, I think it was on the Weekly Substandard, which if you haven't listened to, you should check it out, because it's pretty good. But they apparently, like, that's a thing that happens in Hollywood a lot, and I knew this, but they kind of spelled it out in a way. Whereas you have an idea for a very generic tale that you think you could tell well, and you go to you know, the president of Hollywood, and you say, "I want to make this movie," and they go, "You can't." But if you repackage it as, like, 21 Jump Street, then you can definitely make that movie, and we can sell that. Like, certain things don't need to be packaged as something else, but, like, as far as the storytelling goes, but for the marketing purposes, you have to. So that story doesn't really work, you know, to be marketed. It's just, you know, a love triangle with the king and some guy that comes along. And but if you package it as King Arthur, they go, "Oh, well, we can sell this," and then it becomes a whole different thing. So that movie wasn't very good, but it worked a lot better as just a film. Because it was anchored in this, you know, love story or love triangle between these three people. One of them was the king of something.
Yeah. Well, it's when the issue is, how much Merlin are we going to put in here? And when it's realistic like that, it's, your options are no Merlin, none Merlin in this film. How much Merlin? It's none Merlin. Or you have the Merlin where he's like a weird, wise guy who just tends to be right sometime. Like, he's like an old man, but he's not actually magical and things like that.
Yeah.
Because then you're worried about, you know, do you want it to be Dungeons and Dragons, which is what this movie looks like, where it's like, let's have 100% Merlin who actually throws thunderbolts from his hands and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, and you run the risk of being really cheesy.
Yeah. So too much Merlin.
Yeah, how much Merlin? Oh, too much Merlin in that one, man. It's too much Merlin. It has to be done really well. Like, you could have the Lord of the Rings, or you could have Willow. What would you rather prefer?
Right, and like, the Lord of the Rings, and I think this is a good way to put it, had just enough Merlin in it to kind of...
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is
60-40 Merlin.
So. This could easily become our new barometer for how much bullshit is in a film. Yeah.
You never go full Merlin, man.
What's the Merlin rating on this film?
Yeah. And then you could put like little pictures of a wacky guy with a funny star hat that's like purple on his head, like,
or just like the thumbs up. Like on Rotten Tomatoes, how they have like, you know, it just, and like there's either a tomato or the popcorn depending on whose review, and then just have, yeah, just have the hat and then a percentage next to it.
I get this 8 out of 9 Merlins for the wackiness.
But seriously, yeah. Folks.
This one looks 100% Merlin.
Yeah, but at the same time, it seems to be a story about a guy who's kind of fighting his destiny kind of thing. So I don't mind if there's a little bit more Merlin in this, because he was part of the story, so he sort of needs to be there. Omitting him completely seems to be ridiculous. So you do have to find that Merlin sweet spot.
Yeah.
Say Merlin one more time.
That's the other thing with like when you get stories like Robin Hood and King Arthur, everyone already has an idea of what that is. We all know what they are.
Exactly.
So if you're going to do that story, it's like we have to show something new, and we have to show a different way of him getting there.
Yeah.
We all know he becomes King of England or whatever, and he becomes the king. Everyone looks to him. He's got the Knights of the Round Table. Like, they tried to do something different with that Russell Crowe Robin Hood, and it was horrible because not only, you know, he wasn't actually Robin Hood. He was some other guy assuming that title. And that's why we're like, this isn't the character I know. This is different. You know,
yeah,
like, if you change
so
it too
far.
Much, you're like, I don't, what is this?
Yeah,
he has to be someone who robs from the rich and steals from, you know, and gives to the poor. That's Robin Hood.
Yeah, in this case, he just creates the Magna Carta or some such thing. I'm not even joking. That's not even funny.
I know.
That's actually what happens.
It is a little, but yeah, it's pretty bad.
Something to do with France, and I can't, anyway.
I don't know. There was an archery. I don't know.
Something about bees for no reason. So are we going to King Arthur? What do you think?
I might go see it if there's nothing else to see.
Yeah. It's not a hard pass.
Guy Ritchie does make decent movies.
Yeah.
You know.
Not
so
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but...
No. But Snatch was pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one. It's a long time ago. But that's one with Brad Pitt, who you can't understand him.
Yeah. Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels is kind of a cult movie.
Yeah. I mean, he makes very strong directorial choices, and I appreciate that.
He made those Sherlock Holmes movies.
The first one was good. I liked the first
one. Yeah, they were not terrible.
Yeah.
So.
But, all right. War for the Planet of the Apes wins our podcast award for film with the most titles. Most words in the title.
There are a lot of titles to this, though.
It's 7 words in the title of the movie.
The 43rd Planet of the Apes movie come out so far.
So here's my question. Does anyone else have a hard time taking Woody Harrelson seriously?
Yeah, I think that was a bad choice.
I think that was a really bad choice, especially when you... What?
I thought Gary Oldman was great.
That's...
And now...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't follow up Gary Oldman, the master chameleon of cinema, with the guy from Cheers?
Yeah.
I mean, that's who Woody Harrelson is to me. And I don't think, I mean, not that I was old enough to really have watched all of Cheers, but he was very memorable as the doofy barback in a 1980s sitcom that ran for a bajillion years.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't, and he said, and he has done everything. I mean, this guy has been in every goddamn movie ever made.
Yeah, he's got 90 credits for acting.
Yeah, I mean, like, from White Men Can't Jump to Natural Born Killers, for Christ's sakes, that was a shit show and a half, to The Hunger Games. I mean, this guy has been in every genre I can think of, and he's not always bad. I shouldn't say he's not always bad. He is good. It's just he sort of sticks out like a sore thumb. The one time he didn't, actually, I felt, was in the HBO show True Detective.
Mm-hmm.
With him and Matthew McConaughey, but that's...
Oh, the good season, right?
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's so much better than the bad one, my God.
The good one was better than the bad one, really?
Yeah, but like so much better. I mean, the bad one was so bad.
I mean, they might not make any more of them. It was so bad.
I know, and it was that's unfortunate because the first season of that show was weird and long, and you know, but it was good. Like, it was just really interesting and different kind of TV. But maybe it's because we had 6 or 7 episodes to marinate with the character, but you know, he still kind of he didn't stand out so much. He stands out in films like Planet of the Apes, where it's like, oh, look,
yeah.
And there's Woody Harrelson.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like you see him, you're like, oh, it's Woody Harrelson, and he's wearing face paint, and he's acting like a psychopath. You know what he reminded me of? Matthew McConaughey, oddly enough, in Reign of Fire. You ever see
Wait,
that?
The best post-apocalyptic movie involving dragons?
Yeah.
That Reign of Fire?
That's the best one, really is.
Man, they tried so hard to take all the Merlin out of that movie.
I know. But they couldn't. They couldn't get rid of all the Merlin. It was just like...
No.
Whoa. And even all the science, like, it's not really a dragon. It's actually some sort of fire-breathing lizard. I'm like, it's a... What?
And, yeah, I mean, they go to great lengths to explain to you, like, all the different chemicals that it keeps in its gizzard to
yeah.
try to blow.
Like, how it technically breathes fire from, like, its egg sacs and its mouth. I'm like, whatever, man. It's a dragon, okay? You can't un-Merlin that. But Matthew McConaughey plays a crazy military guy with the shaved head and the war paint and, you know, like... You think he's normal at first. It turns out he's just totally nuts. And that's just what Woody Harrelson looks like. He looks more fake than the monkeys.
Yes.
You know? Because Which the rest of the trailer looked great.
Oh, yeah. I
was like, I can't wait to see this.
This is going to be a good movie, you know? And yeah. What I'm really kind of excited about is that you're like the monkeys are talking now.
Yes. And I thought sign languaging over.
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice progression. I mean, even though this first movie, you know, with Dr. James Franco.
was he married to Dr. Natalie Richards? Or what was her name? She was in the Bond movie.
Who?
Denise Richards. Dr. Denise Richards.
Oh, yes, Dr. Denise Richards. Nuclear physicist, Denise Richards.
A Juilliard-trained scientist. That's what I always think.
Yeah. But, I mean, that one aside, and that one was still good. It had James Franco in it.
It was a good start.
Yeah.
To this trilogy they've created.
Yeah, I mean, the downside to that first movie was, A, James Franco, because he's not believable as a scientist. He's just not. I'm sorry, James. Speaking of James Franco, I remember this is a total side note, but I thought this was kind of funny. So for those of you listening, which I assume you are, Phil and I grew up in a town called Palisades, which is right near a town called Piermont in New York, where they film a lot of movies. And I'm walking down through Piermont, and I see a bunch of trailers set up, and then some Teamsters are sitting there. And so I'm walking by, and I say to them, "What are they doing over here?" They go, "Oh, they're shooting a movie." I said, "Oh, yeah? Who's in it?" They go, "Well, James Franco." I went, "Oh." And the guy looked at me. He's a big fat guy. Like, "What's the matter? You don't like James Franco?" Look, he's all right, I guess. He was so surprised that I was sort of like nonplussed about James Franco.
Does that mean I can walk through and just get to my car? You know? Do I have to go around?
Yeah, seriously. But anyway, so yeah, he was the downside. And then like the bad guy in the film was, of course, the evil corporation CEO guy and like total disregard for human life character for no reason.
Yeah, there's always one of them.
I mean, you can do that, but like they hand it up to the point where it's just kind of obnoxious. But the apes have like a nice progression throughout these three movies. In the beginning, there's just Caesar who's got all the intelligence, and then he lets the gas loose on the other apes, and you know they follow him, but they can't do much of anything. And then in the second film, they all speak with sign language, and in this one now they're all talking, and so it's a very slow burn. But they're developing this world that was created with this stupid ass Charlton Heston movie in 1960 whatever. But they seem to have taken their time with the whole concept of the apes and having them develop in like their own culture and civilization. I don't think that's
I like that they're not reliant on that stuff. You know, so like we went and saw the Tim Burton remake.
Ooh.
And it was it was rough. If that had been a podcast then, it would have felt like work. You know, and they had all these stupid throwbacks, and they, you know, were really guys in monkey suits and yada yada. It's like, it was a odd concept, and they did the best they could in the 60s with it. I get that. You know, we're working with straws here.
And that movie really depends upon the end.
Yeah. Like, I mean, would you still remember if it hadn't been that twist?
Right. I mean, it really, I don't think anybody would have given a shit, but. Because he's, you know, he goes through time, and it's not the future. It's the it's not the past. It's the future, or it's not some kind of alternate dimension. It's Earth. You know, that's the whole movie.
Yeah.
You know, so and of course you get that, you know, brilliant Charlton Heston moment.
Yeah, but then the Tim Burton was trying to like play off of that, and it was like, you're playing off something stupid. That's time has passed. So now we have this new one with Andy Serkis and everything. It's like, let's take this interesting concept and actually make it interesting and update it. And they've done a really good job.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of what you want people to do if they have to do this. And it seems to, this is all that they want to do in Hollywood, is to make movies people are already familiar with to a certain degree. Because people don't want to go. They don't want to risk the money on new stuff. And there's a whole generation of fans that don't know all about it. And so there is, you know, so they have a property that's, they know worked at some point. And so they know how to market it and they can sell it. Okay, fine. If that's how you want to make half your, you know, 80% of your films, great. But this is how you want them to do it. Like, this is the best way to do this. And there's a lot of times where we say to ourselves, well, what would it really be like if this happened? We take some cheesy concept from a previous movie or a TV show or a comic book, and you say, you know, how would that really... This is the nail on the head, I think, in terms of really thinking the whole thing through and making consistent choices and, you know, making clear choices, first of all, and not doing an homage, which generally doesn't lead you with any leave you with good results, as it didn't with Tim Burton's version of this, and you know, the Bryan Singer Superman, like that. You can't make a movie that's all homage, because you know, you're wasting everyone's time.
Right. I mean, so the last one, I was enthralled.
Oh, and that's the movie.
Yeah, it was really like, I don't know what is going on, but I like this. Yeah. I like monkeys on horses shooting two machine guns as it rides through flames.
You know, and yeah, you can do shit like that if the rest of the movie is good.
Yeah.
You know?
So I was like, oh, I'm on board. So like, I saw the trailer for this one, and despite Woody Harrelson,
yeah,
I was like, oh, wow, this is really, you know. The last movie was a 10. This is up to 11.
Yeah, so
you know, so I will definitely be seeing this one.
All right, The Mummy.
The Mummy. So, Tom Cruise.
I saw a trailer for this last night for the first time, and we sat there and we watched him and Russell Crowe for a few minutes, and I turned to my wife and went, that wouldn't be a remake of the Brendan Fraser 1999 Mummy, would it? And she Googled it, and she's like, you know, it is.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like it.
No, it doesn't. And I'm not sure if that's going to help them or not. But apparently, this is a part of a new cinematic universe. That's the new thing now. We don't make movies anymore. We make cinematic universi, I think is the plural.
Universes.
You're right. So this is
mummies?
This is the first in a series, followed by The Invisible Man, Wolfman, Van Helsing, Creature from the Black Lagoon, and The Bride of Frankenstein.
Do they all have to like team up at the end?
I think so.
Like, how does this work?
I think that's what happens, and then they go fight Harry Potter and all of his people.
And then they fight the Wizard of Oz.
So,
like,
yeah.
Why does that need to be a shared thing?
It's because you can make more money. I mean, We forget, because we're, you know, still novices at this. Most of their money is made elsewhere. So for, you know, for every dollar that they make in the U.S., they make three or four more overseas. And China loves shit that blows up. So the latest King Kong movie, which was panned, it was reviewed very poorly, is part of it was only made so they could then later on make a King Kong versus Godzilla, because that's going to sell like gangbusters in China. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, and I think that's Legendary Pictures too, which is totally their bag, is to just make things that make money overseas. And so they'll spend $200 million on something like that, you know, over two films, and then they'll make it back three or four times over, but mostly overseas. So a lot of these films, they're marketed here, yes, but also, you know, elsewhere.
Yeah, but I'm just curious as to why. Like, I understand we're going to make a whole new set of monster movies. Okay, people like monster movies, but what's the benefit of making them some sort of one shared universe? Does the creature in the lagoon be like, let's avoid that's the mummy's territory. Let's not go there.
Well, I think the setup was, because the trailer I saw on TV was different than the one I watched this afternoon. And basically, the Russell Crowe character is Dr. Jekyll. Not basically, he's Dr. Jekyll. And he and Tom Cruise are going to set up their whole little shop where they hunt down monsters. So I think Tom Cruise is going to be in all these movies.
Really?
Yeah, and it's going to be like, you know, this is what we do. We're the league of people who go fight monsters. And the first one is The Mummy, and the second one will be, the, you know, the other ones.
Okay. But, I mean, that's what I was thinking. Like, that could make sense, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's you, like the through line is just Tom Cruise. So
yeah, basically.
All right. I wonder if Brendan Fraser was asked to do a cameo or not.
I hope so.
I doubt it.
I like Brendan Fraser.
He was good.
Something wrong with him. He just had poor choices of movies he was making.
Yeah, I was just going to say, he didn't make a lot of great movies, but he made some good ones.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why he did, you know, Dudley Do-Right or George of the Jungle, but he did it, and he got paid, and... He was fine,
or,
I guess.
Or Biodome, or...
or Encino Man.
Encino Man, my God. What was the one where he was like living in a fallout shelter with his parents for 50 years?
Then
he wakes up and he gets married to Alicia Silverstone.
Yeah. My girlfriend, or my fiance, I suppose. She saw that movie like 100 times. She quotes it a lot, too. I'm like, what are you quoting exactly? She's like, it's the one where he's stuck underground. I was like, that doesn't help, like, whatsoever. But, well, whatever. I mean, so are
Brendan
we going to
Fraser
see?
Bunker movie. It's literally what it's called. Blast from the Past.
Blast from the Past.
Yeah, okay. So, anyway. Yeah, it was funny. I was thinking about it, and I'm like, gee, you know what? Doesn't seem like it's been that long since that movie came out, but I guess to some people it's so far in the, you know, it would look like a B movie now. Both
the Mummy with Brendan Fraser,
yeah, both in the production value and in like the approach they took with it, which was kind of like not quite tongue in cheek, but there was humor in it. This movie looks to be totally humorless, like most films today are.
I mean, that was a cheap. It was not as good as Indiana Jones, and it was better than a sci-fi movie.
So somewhere in between,
kind of in the middle.
Raiders and the Librarian.
Yeah, yeah. It was 1999, and we had enough money for special effects, but we couldn't afford anything good like a script, so we just threw Brendan Fraser up there.
Yeah,
yeah. Go on a wacky adventure where you can like knock a guy out in the back of the head. You know, nothing happens.
Makes that satisfying bong sound.
Yeah. Where they go like their eyes crossed and they go, ooh, and they fall over.
And like you hear but don't see birds.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, this one with Tom Cruise looks very serious, very dreary. I can't tell if it's supposed to be a horror movie or if it's like an action thriller or something.
That doesn't bode well.
I mean, if it's very scary, I probably won't go see it.
Yeah, that's if that, like, if who's that's
it for?
Thing.
Is it for kids? Doesn't look like it.
I don't know. There were kids at Logan and Deadpool.
Yeah.
So.
Who's supposed to be watching this is a better question.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, I'm not quite so sure either what's going on. By the way, Russell Crowe, really, he's not very good, is he?
It depends what he's doing.
Really, very heavily.
You know.
I can't.
He was good in A Beautiful Mind, even though I don't like that movie.
He was okay in that.
He wasn't good in Gladiator.
No.
Now, there's a movie that doesn't hold up.
Oh, Christ.
You should really go back and watch, because it's really not good.
Oh. I'll never forget the, you know, when they're supposed to be yelling at each other from the Colosseum floor. Now, I've been to the Colosseum. We're pretty lucky, been able to do that. It's fairly large, you know.
It's a big place. So
I can't imagine it filled with throngs of screaming fans and yelling back and forth between the guy in the middle. You know, and there's a tiger over there, and then there's the emperor, and then he asks him what his name. He goes, "My name is Gladiator." It's the worst written line in all of cinema.
Pick the title in there somehow.
Oh my god! Just oof. Anyway,
like I probably picture, like if I was standing in the middle of a baseball field, like could I hear the guy behind home plate, like 40 rows up? Probably not.
No,
hey, dude. What's your name? You know,
you were telling Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, that's Gladiator. What?
Anyway, so yeah, I'm not so sure I'm going to go see this one. But you're right. If you know, more trailers lead us to believe that it's more horror than it is, and it won't be all horror because it's, you know, that would be kind of alienating. But if that's where they're going with it in general, it's like I don't care. I don't need to see that. You know, so we'll save the Justice League for the end. Did you watch the Dunkirk trailer?
Yeah, it looks okay.
Yeah, I think it's under advertised in that trailer, which is fine. Like it's a war picture about the evacuation of the British Army off of out of France. In like 1939, mm-hmm. And it doesn't really tell you much about, you know, who anybody is in it, but you just get a look at everyone who is in it. You know, Cillian Murphy, Kenneth Branagh, Mark Rylance, and Tom Hardy, the guy that the main character. It seems like the main character who I don't really know who he is. But they're all fantastic actors.
So. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I don't know why they do this. They did this with, it reminds me of Saving Private Ryan, where, because I was young when that came out, and all they kept saying was, Tom Hanks is in it, and it's the most bloody, realistic depiction of D-Day. And I was like, two of those things are going to cancel themselves out. I would love to see Tom Hanks. I don't want to see Tom Hanks's intestines hanging out of him.
Which you do see in the film. Not his, but someone's.
Right. So, like, when I finally saw it, like, years later, you know, I didn't know what to expect except to strap myself in and, like, prepare to be blown. Like, I wasn't sure who I was supposed to be watching, who's the main character, what's the plot. All I saw were people's heads getting blown off and faces torn off. And I was like, why am I watching this?
Yeah.
And that's just me. Some people don't care. Some people like that stuff. But like, if I'm going to watch a movie about Dunkirk, I mean, I'd like to know a little more going in as to why I should watch a movie about Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it's going to be horribly violent and depressing and dark. And like, I need a little bit more to go on besides subjecting myself to that for 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know?
Saving Private Ryan, actually, I think to be a pretty overrated movie.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's within the 3 hours of carnage and nonsense. There is a good story, but you can literally cut the movie in half and still be able to tell that story. Like, you don't need the half an hour's worth, and it is a half an hour.
Of D-Day?
Yeah, of the landing on Omaha Beach. You don't need it.
Right, well, that's the thing. Like, I don't want to watch war documentaries. I want to watch story about people.
Right.
And in that movie, when it starts, it's a half an hour of just people getting shot at and getting blown up. And yeah, you follow Tom Hanks for a lot of it, but just as much of it, you don't. Yeah. You're just watching random grunts.
Yeah.
I'm like, I could just watch the History Channel for this. Like, why do I need to see this in such gory detail?
Yeah. And I mean, the story itself, you know, getting these guys together to go get one other guy in the, you know, the one line is great. Like, it's looking for a needle in a stack of needles.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, but like every, you know, every 10 feet they run into a thing and, oh, look, there's Paul Giamatti. And, oh, look, there's Ted fucking Danson.
Yeah, that was weird.
They all stick out like sore thumbs. And
well, that's what I'm worried about this movie, too. Like, all those actors you mentioned, they're really great people. Are they cameos? Are they all in together? Like,
no, I think they're all in it together. That's not Christopher Nolan's style. I think that's very much a, you know, a Steven Spielberg thing. Is, you know, we're making pictures.
Yeah.
You know, get all your friends together and make a movie. And Nolan takes himself much more serious than that. And I don't know. He's made mostly kind of sci-fi sort of pictures for the last few years. And this is definitely not that. I'm trying to think if he's made anything more straightforward. Christopher Nolan. But I don't think so. So, like, yeah, like all the Batmans, Inception, Interstellar, which was kind of a mind fuck a little bit. He hasn't really.
I really enjoyed The Prestige, but that was
I did
not,
too.
You know, that was not a realistic thing either. So.
No, it not so much. And it,
but
it
stuck with you. It made you think. And
yeah, and it was a sort of, you know, it was a clever, not too, there wasn't too much Merlin in it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was only a little Merlin towards the end.
Yeah, just towards the end. And in a terrifying kind of way, too. In a nice sort of scary, like, he's creating all these people that he's then murdering, you know? Like,
yeah.
Yowza. So, but yeah. So this seems to be a relatively straightforward story. No, there seems to be zero Merlin in this at all, which of course you wouldn't want in World War II historical
like this picture.
Picture
a wizard coming in on a Pegasus with his wand. Follow me, everyone.
I don't think that really happened.
Yeah, so. I don't remember that part.
Yeah. And all right, so I'll probably go see. I'll wait to see to hear more about it, just to see what level of violence I can expect. This is like a Saving Private Ryan level of violence, or you know, an Inglourious Bastards level of violence, or what.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I mean, he's a good director, and it's you can't. I'm sure he'll do a really good job. I mean, Interstellar was hard to watch sometimes because
I liked it, but yeah, I see your point,
but. That didn't have any war and battle scenes, and I was exhausted at the end of it. So I was like, well, I'll probably wait on this one, on Dunkirk.
Blade Runner got, they released a teaser for Blade Runner. And not much to it.
Is Harrison Ford in that?
Yeah.
Oh, I really? He'll bitch and moan about Star Wars, but he'll do another Blade Runner.
Well, he'll bitch and moan until the check arrives, it seems. That, yeah. But to be fair, so do I. So.
Yeah, well.
I won't be in your picture until you.
Yeah, but nobody wants to see you. No offense. That's why you don't do a video podcast.
No. It's not an accident. Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing to it other than, you know, it's Blade Runner and it takes place later. Have you ever seen Blade Runner?
Yeah. I saw, like, the director's cut that was, like, 9 hours or whatever.
So, I don't... Here's my problem with Blade Runner. I have tried to watch it twice. The first time, I tried to watch what I think was the one I'm supposed to watch, which is the one without the voiceover and with Edward James almost leaving commentative origami everywhere.
Yeah.
Which is a fun expression to say, commentative origami. But that's what it was. And then I couldn't get into it, and I stopped watching it. And then years later, I went and I tried to watch, I think, the original theatrical release, which contained the voiceover, which I later learned that Harrison Ford didn't like so much. He resented having to do it, that he phoned it in completely, with the idea being that, well, I'm going to do this so poorly that they're not going to use it. Mm-hmm. And they did anyway. So that doesn't help. So I don't know which version of this to see, and I don't think I care anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. So the version I saw was kind of like that. But it strikes me as like it was an... That movie was too far ahead of its time for the special effects.
Yeah.
And it ended up getting chopped up and edited too many times. And in the version I saw, and apparently this happened in the theatrical one as well, they give you like the scrolling text that tells you what happens. Five robots escape from some facility, and they're just trying to lead normal lives, and Harrison Ford has been brought in to track them down. I'm like, okay, great. That's the plot of the movie in a nutshell.
Sure. Okay.
I don't know if you remember. There's only four robots in the movie. And okay. The entire film, I'm sitting in the back of my head going, he's missing a robot. Like, he's hell-bent on catching these things, and he can't, and one of them is missing. And he never got it. So at the end, I went on IMDb to look it up. There was meant to be another robot, and they just didn't film it. And rather than change the beginning of the movie, they just left that part in.
So this is like a Jim,
so mad.
This is like a Jimmy and Bimmy kind of thing.
Yeah, Bimmy and Jimmy. Yeah, the whole time I was like, wasn't there another one? And then there was all the mumbo jumbo about whether he was really a robot and didn't recognize it. And
mumbo jumbo.
Just.
You gotta bring that.
It's an
back
industry.
Too.
It's an industry term. So
yeah.
The concept of Blade Runner with me was four robots escape and he has to go bring them in because they look like humans. That's a great concept.
Sure.
He doesn't spend a lot of time in the movie doing that exactly.
No, he spends a lot of time with Sean Young questioning his own insanity, I think.
Yeah. I was like, this could have been a really cool action movie, but it's not a really cool anything.
Yeah.
Like, if he doesn't know what's going on, how am I supposed to know what's going on? And then if you edit it poorly, I really don't know what's going on.
And I think that's why they put the voiceover in, which unfortunately didn't help anybody.
Yeah, like every time they tried to do something, it just made it worse. So, I mean, I was
what
like...
What they should have done was learn how to count.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
So like when they were like, they're making another Blade Runner, I'm like, well, the last one wasn't very good, so who cares? But apparently I'm in the minority there.
I mean, cinephiles love this film, I think, predominantly for the visuals. They really like the way it looks. Because I guess at the time, this was revolutionary. And I remember I heard a podcast with Alton Brown and the guy from Mythbusters. Not the guy with the crazy mustache, but the guy with the goatee.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of his name, but apparently the two guys from Mythbusters were special effects guys for years, yeah. So they're really big film buffs, and this podcast was mostly just about movies, and they talked for a long time about Blade Runner and The Godfather, mm-hmm. And one of the things about The Godfather I didn't realize was that. You remember that scene when Michael explains to everyone what he's going to do? He's going to shoot the cop, and they're going to put it in the papers that the cop was dirty so no one feels, you know. Remember how the camera kind of zooms in very slowly? That's the first time that the camera moves in the entire film.
Hmm.
Everything else, if you go back and watch it...
Still shots.
It's still shots, and they might pan. I remember like there's a scene in the beginning when the cops are... taking down license plates at the wedding, and Sonny comes out and he gets all pissed off at them, and like the camera may pan, but that might have been just a thing for TV.
Yeah,
you know, where they had to zoom in on the widescreen. But the camera, it's all still shots. The camera does not move until that one. And I always remember thinking, I like this scene. This is a great moment. And he, you know, like I couldn't figure out why. And it's one thing I learned from that conversation I listened to with the two of them was that was the first time the camera moved on the dolly at all. And I'm like, that's amazing. And you can make it, you know, an hour into a movie without moving the goddamn camera.
No, I mean, The Godfather is a near perfect movie.
It's a masterpiece. It really is. So yeah, Blade Runner, going to make another one of those. I don't like Ryan Gosling, I've decided.
He's okay.
I don't think he can act. I think he's extraordinarily handsome and very charming, but that's not the same thing as acting.
And when I think Blade Runner, I don't think charming.
No.
I think depressing, dreary, you know, a lot of silence, a lot of moping. You know, Harrison Ford doesn't crack a smile in Blade Runner.
To be fair, I haven't seen The Notebook, but like flipping through, like I'll stop and I'll look at it and I'll spend 45 seconds going, what is everyone getting so hyped up with this movie for? He does a lot of staring and looking sad in The Notebook.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible that's what they're going off of.
Yeah, La La Land too.
Yeah. It's true. I mean, he does this thing where he just simply stares, and they want you to think he's being really deep, and he's not. He's just staring. Like, I don't know why people don't see how vacant that look is, but there's like the lights are on, but nobody's home. Like it's obvious to me. I mean, and there are times in movies, you know, with like various films with him and Emma Stone, where yeah, he's engaging. But he's, you know, that's when he's having to talk or, you know, be excited about something. He, you know, he can do that. But, you know, dark and brooding is just kind of like vapid and vacant.
But that's what I think of for Blade Runner. Yeah.
So he's perfect.
Yeah. So maybe. Maybe. He's perfect for that role. I don't plan to see it.
So, yeah,
I saw Blade Runner so long ago now too. I don't really remember a lot of it. It's like Apocalypse Now. Like I saw it. I saw one of the edits. I couldn't tell you a damn thing about it now that it's been a few years.
I skipped the bit with the French people.
Oh yeah, there's one where they find like an abandoned plane and they camp out in that for about 4 weeks. I don't know. It was like a 9-hour cut. And the whole time I sat there like, oh, I just want this to end.
Far better than that movie, I think, actually, is the documentary that his wife made about it.
Yeah.
Called Hearts of Darkness.
If it's even slightly interesting, it's a better movie.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. And it's just, you know, it was apparently it was like a hellish thing trying to get that film made.
Well, Coppola was demanding, let's say.
Yeah, say the least.
Very exacting kind of guy.
All right. The Justice League, everybody.
Wait, I got one more. Did you see the trailer for the movie It?
No, because that should be really scary, right?
I nearly pooped my pants watching the trailer. It was terrifying.
God.
Because I really wanted to see, because I've seen Tim Curry in the old version, like the TV movie they did. You know, and he was scary in that, but it was kind of like, you know, cheesy 90s scary or whatever.
Yeah.
So I wanted to see what this new guy was going to do with it. And he's barely in the trailer. He only makes a couple appearances. And oh my God, he was, oh man.
Yeah, I'll watch it at work tomorrow. I won't watch it now. It's late.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm just really curious. I'm sure the movie will be scary, but that's one of his better books.
Is it?
Yeah. And like the internet exploded when it came out because everyone was like, wow. Like, everybody was shitting on it. Like, wow, like they can't possibly beat Tim Curry. He was great. Yes, Tim Curry was great. And everyone loves Tim Curry. But a scary killer clown is still very scary. And yeah, you got my attention.
Yeah, whoa. I mean,
whoa, it was scary.
I think anyone has a scary killer clown is. That's pretty scary. Wasn't there a weird scene in The Mentalist one time with a scary clown?
No, with The Mentalist? Probably.
Yeah, there was some weird scene I remember in The Mentalist. And
was the clown hiding in a storm drain?
No, like, it was like an odd opening shot.
What he does.
Where I should really look it up because it was quite bizarre, and I was like, "What is this doing in this movie? In this episode?" But I'll look at it later. But anyway,
so yeah, I'm depending on how well that comes out, I might actually go see that.
It?
Yeah.
Really?
It was a good book. Well, they're also making the Dark Tower.
You had a hard time with the trailer. You're gonna have to sit through 2.5 hours or something.
Hey, I do it because I love movies. Okay. And this podcast. Right. And all of you fans. Fan.
Well, you let me know how that goes.
Yeah, I will. I'll call you from the bathroom. Like, you got 40 me minutes. Up? Yeah. I just left my keys in there.
I won't go back in.
Anyway, all right. So, Justice League.
This looks terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Did you see Batman vs. Superman? That was terrible.
Well, what it needed, though, was simply more terrible. Then it'll get better, yeah. Apparently. So, all right. Here are my various list of problems with this film. When the fuck did Aquaman become a douchey bro?
I don't know.
I mean, like, the whole bit in one of the trailers where he goes to like an ice fishing village in the deep north and, you know, looking for aqua. Why would a surfer dude be hanging out with the ice fisherman?
I mean, is he a surfer dude, or is he just comes across that way?
What's the difference?
Because in the first few trailers, he came across as this really angry guy. He looked like an angry Hawaiian or something.
Yeah. I mean, that's it wasn't much to it, but that's basically what he came across as. And okay, fine. That's not that interesting, but it kind of makes sense in a way. All these guys are, you know, in this universe are kind of brooding or whatever. But I don't know. It just, this is like the new direction that they've taken with him. This, you know, very serious looking guy, you know, doesn't behave in that kind of serious way. He's trying to be funny and lighthearted, and you know, he's a big drinker, and I don't know. It was an odd direction for them to take with the character, I thought.
I know you don't watch the cartoon, but I always come back to these cartoons.
Not all of them, but I have.
In the Justice League cartoon, Aquaman is part of that, and they were like, we have to do Aquaman, but we don't want to do the lame Aquaman everyone knows. Because that, you know, it's just a bad, it's a bad mental image everyone has of Aquaman. So they looked at it, okay, Aquaman, he's the king of the sea, king of Atlantis. He came across like King Arthur type, like noble man who can speak to seahorses, you know, and whatever the voiceover would say. And they were like, what if he was not the king of, like, King Arthur? What if he was, like, the king of the barbarians instead? And so they designed him to be, like, this brutish, you know, he's got a hook for a hand, kind of like the king of the Vikings would be, you know, like the long hair. And he was vastly more interesting that way.
Sure.
You know, quick-tempered, kind of angry. So it seems like they're ripping that off here.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever. But that works in a cartoon because they didn't use him very often. They really only used Aquaman when it was important to the ocean. Because his skills are very limited.
Yeah.
I mean, what is he doing in this movie that they need him so bad?
It was the main reason that he was the character that, you know, Vinny Chase plays in... An Entourage, is because they figured they're not going to make an Aquaman movie. Pretty safe, right? You know, and I thought the best possible, because in that show they always showed you one scene from all of his movies that they just played over and over again.
Yeah, well, like where he like leaps into the ocean.
Yeah, where he's running on the Santa Monica Pier and he dives off the end of the pier into a giant wave. It's brilliant. I mean. And I remember they were talking about it, like, we need a cheap 30 seconds that you, so go film something with him near water and we'll call it a day. Yeah, but like, I can, the Viking thing makes sense, the angry man makes sense, you know, the getting rid of that nobility thing makes sense, but making him into a frat boy?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm hoping it's more like the cartoon, but
I don't know. We'll see.
You know, I don't know what else he can do. He has the trident, and he can talk to fish.
He's super strong. Strong is good, right?
Yeah, super strong.
You know, whatever.
Here's the other thing too. When he's in the comic books, he's not the only one. He lives in Atlantis with other fish people like him.
Oh,
are they in this movie?
I don't think so. But then again, I don't really know. Cyborg looks really poorly animated.
Yeah.
Like, embarrassingly animated.
The thing with Cyborg is that the only part of him that's like a human is his eye. Like, half his face. And the rest of him is just a robot. So, yeah, he's going to have to be CGI, I guess.
And that's fine, but, you know, it doesn't look like they did a very good job with it. A lot of money they put into this movie.
Yeah, well, they're going to get it, so.
I guess all that went into insuring Ben Affleck.
Yeah, they didn't pay for Gal Gadot's acting lessons, so. Yeah. She's still horrible.
Oh, she's terrible. Easy on the eyes, though.
Yeah, well, she's all over my Dr. Pepper packages now, so they're plugging her movie pretty hard.
What else is going on? J.K. Simmons apparently is Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah.
That's kind of a waste, I feel.
Well, right. Yeah. He doesn't strike me as... I mean, maybe he's great. I don't know. But he's like Woody Harrelson. He stands out.
Yeah.
Hey, it's J.K. Simmons. I always kind of looked... like, I liked Gary Oldman in that character because he looks like the everyman. He looks like just some schlubby cop.
Well, Gary Oldman, I remember that when I went to go see Batman Begins, I was like, okay, I'll be on the lookout for Gary Oldman. He's in this movie. It was maybe towards the end. I went, oh my God, that's Gary Oldman. I had no idea who that like that was him. Mm-hmm. He blended in so well.
Yeah, and that's what Commissioner Gordon's supposed to be like.
Yeah, he's just a cop. Mm-hmm. So. I did think the I'm rich line was kind of funny, but...
That might be the only funny line of the movie.
I think so. And they blew their wad there. Yeah, I mean, this just looks like a poorly lit action movie with no story. It looks like garbage.
Well, the story is, from what I'm gathering, it's the same as the Avengers.
Right.
You know, there's a villain from the planet of villains, where everyone's a bad guy, and he brings his army of bug people with him, and they have to just fight the bug people off.
And they even have the little MacGuffin thing that vibrates in the corner.
Yeah, that's the thing that it's like the transdimensional gateway. It's called a mother box. It lets them go from Earth to the planet is called Apocalypse. Yeah, I know. It just
look. I didn't mind yawning directly into the mic about that.
Where did I lose you?
I mean, even that scene between Batman and the Flash is the same scene that was in Captain America: Civil War when Tony Stark goes to meet Spider-Man.
Yeah.
It's the same damn scene.
Well, the Flash is the only character that makes jokes. The other ones are, like, so dreary and depressing.
Yeah.
So it's basically going to just be like Batman versus Superman, only Superman's not in it. You know.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is what they do. The Warner Brothers likes to make movies that don't really differentiate themselves from each other at all, whereas Marvel doesn't. They make better movies that, you know, take different points of view with characters and, you know, utilize different genres. They don't want to do that, it seems, and that's fine.
Well, I think at this point they're too far in. Like, these ones are too far gone that maybe the next one they can do something. Like, this is still a Zack Snyder film.
Yeah, but all they're doing is playing catch-up, and that is an unenviable position to be in, so I don't think this is an easy job. But, I mean, if that's how you make every decision, okay, fine. But it's this is what you're going to get.
So. I don't know. I mean, you didn't see Suicide Squad.
No.
But it was horrible. Absolutely horrible. And they tried to salvage that by recutting it 100 ways to make it better after Batman Superman didn't do well. So whether they're going to do that again and screw it up, or they're just going to be like, let Zach make his movie. You know, either way, they're kind of screwed. They kind of have to start over again. And I don't think they're going to do that. At least they can't with this one. You know, and Wonder Woman's coming out, and I don't really want to see that.
Yeah.
It was because it's the same thing. You're like, there's Chris Pine trying to save a movie that can't be saved because the tone and the vision behind it is not any good.
Yeah, and of course, the biggest complaint that I've heard, though, is that she has no armpit hair.
Oh, my God.
That was a thing.
I have to admit, that never occurred to me. Because it's stupid.
Yes.
What's the next one? That she fights in heels and wears a headband and shows her cleavage. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
She's a woman. Yeah. What'd you expect?
Yeah.
Women shave their armpits. Don't they?
Well, they try.
Have I been lied to all this time?
they try to go that hyper-realistic route where they're like, well, she's been living here with, like, oh, my God, I guess so.
I guess. But, are you telling me on an island full of women they would all stop shaving their armpits? I don't think so. I just don't think that's going to happen.
I think their point is that they never started. And why would they? Because, oh, God, good God.
It's annoying.
It's itchy. I don't like it.
And then it itches, yeah.
Yeah.
If it were socially acceptable, more men would be doing that, but they don't.
So, all right, that's our...
Are you going to go see Justice League?
Oh, no. God, no.
Yeah.
I mean... No, it's going to feel like work, and this podcast is not a job.
There's another... Justice League is going to be 2 movies, right?
I imagine it'll be 15 by the end of it, yeah.
No, but I mean, like, this one is they're splitting it in 2?
I don't remember. I mean, it's possible, but I don't recall that.
Oh, okay.
Sounds like something that they would do. Yeah. I find it funny that the Wonder Woman comes out pretty much on top of this movie.
Yeah, when does Wonder Woman come out?
Yeah.
Let's look.
Because it seems to be odd that you do it one right after the other.
Yeah, I don't know what the... Like, what the benefit of that would be.
I don't think there would be one. It's more of a... Yeah, I mean, June Justice 2nd. League comes out in November... And then I guess Wonder Woman's this summer, right?
Yeah. Oh, so Justice League is a while from now then.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's not really on top of each other.
Yeah, it's yeah, I guess it's, you know, typical, you know, May, June, and then November. All right. So not quite that ridiculous. But anyway.
Anyway, what's everybody else planning to watch?
Yes, let us know. And if you're excited about one of these films and you think we're wrong, you can tell us that too. Probably won't listen to you, but you can tell us. And if we're missing something amazing in this Justice League, you know, pile of hot garbage, then, you know, I'd love to have that pointed out to me because it just looks like a dumpster fire. Oh, my God.
Please tell me why you're wrong.
Be very helpful. So, yes, and... I didn't put out a poll for the last movie, but I think I'll put these out and I'll see if I can get everyone's opinions as to, you know, what you're most excited about in terms of what's coming up in the next, you know, months. So,
well, hopefully this summer is better than last summer.
Yeah, that was a desert last summer.
Yeah, I mean, I went to things, and every time I did, I was like, this was the worst idea ever.
Yeah.
Between Ghostbusters and Turtles and, you know...
Apocalypse.
Batman, Superman. Yeah, oh, it was just the worst.
Yeah, so...
And every time I came home, I was like, this sucks. I just want to watch one good movie.
Honestly. So, all right. Like I said, please, if you have any suggestions or opinions or questions or comments, you can tweet us. We're at @3DrinksInPod on Twitter, @3DrinksInPod. You can find us on Instagram @3DrinksInPodcast. What else do we have? Facebook. You can go to the Facebook page. And, of course, the website is 3DrinksInPodcast.com. Mm-hmm. Anything coming up in the next few weeks that we were talking about? I can't recall.
My
mind is blank at this point.
No, I think we got a little bit of a break, and then like the movies will really hit in May.
Yeah.
And there'll be a lot.
Yeah, we'll try and revisit some older things. Yeah, take a look at the next in the James Bond line, which is Goldfinger.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty easy one to tackle because it's the best one of the original ones. So
yeah.
All right. I guess that's just about everything. As always, please drink responsibly.
Indeed.
And we'll talk to you next time.
Take care.
Adios.